History That Doesn't Suck is a legit, hard-hitting American history podcast told through entertaining stories. As we approach America's 250th anniversary, now might be the time to go back and learn how we got here. With more than 200 episodes, you can binge your way, decade by decade, defining event to defining event, from the founding into the 20th century. Join me, Professor Greg Jackson, for History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
There's one chip and only one chip for the guacamole. That's that Cantina Gold, thick in the yellow bag.
Mm-hmm. It's Mike Shope.
No thin crisp, no scoops. Get out of here with hint of lime. Horrendous choice.
And the Bulldog.
The lime is just too much lime. There's lime in the guacamole. Any more lime is too much lime. You're crossing the line. You've crossed the line. If you're using hint of lime in the guacamole with the lime, you've crossed the line.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog on WGR Sports Radio 550.
I'm going to talk to HR because I don't feel like that open equally represents my position on the matter.
Yeah, it's very one-sided.
I think I should, not to make light of HR. I'm trying to be cute. Anyway, glad to have you with us here on a hot Thursday. Maybe thunderstorms in the area. Anyway, head on a swivel out there. Nate Geary in for Mike. I'm the Bulldog. Happy to welcome back to the show our old friend Mike Tenier, co-founder of Two Deep Zone, formerly, I love this, formerly of Football Outsiders, the New York Times, the Messenger, Bleacher Report, and other ancient empires, although the Blue Sky bio is a little bit different. Mike, it's nice to talk to you again, and I feel like we got to make an effort to make sure we do this during the season, because I'm having flashbacks to being in here while Mike is on vacation and Nate is here and talking to you like 5 years in a row, I feel like. I don't know. Anyway, it's nice to talk to you again, man. How are you?
I'm doing great. It is sort of like the sign of summer here. It's like the 4th of July ends, and you guys call me up, and it's time to talk Bills training camp again.
Right. We're a little early for that, but still, we are here. How are things, man? How's Two Deep Zone going? I assume you still contributed to the Almanac, the FTN joint now. How's everything going? You keeping busy?
Oh, I'm keeping very busy. And yes, I contributed 8 chapters, not the Bills chapter, but NFC East and NFC West chapters to the Football Outsiders Almanac, now the FTN Almanac. And that is on sale now. You can go to FTNFantasy.com and download it. It's tons and tons of work on my part, work on Aaron Schatz's part, and stats, information, jokes, scouting, everything you could ask for to get ready for the NFL season.
Well, in an ever-changing world, we know we can always count on that almanac, which is produced by humans like yourself and Aaron and lots of others. So cheers on that. So my guy Nate here an hour or so ago said something that I thought was pretty interesting, and then we had a clip of Booger McFarland from ESPN basically saying the same thing, that he thinks and Nate thinks – I should let Nate tell you, right? Anyway, he's sitting right here, but he's busy watching soccer. The Bills have more pressure, the most pressure of any team in the league on them this year. How does that land on you?
I think that's the case, and it might be something we said last July. It's that nothing except good health matters in training camp. Nothing matters in September. Nothing matters in October. The season begins in January. You know, there is no, hey, this team went 11-6. Wasn't that a win? No, that's not a win. The Super Bowl is the win, and that's been persistent. It's been every year. If anything, the pressure is increased. It's now increasing on Joe Brady instead of Sean McDermott. It's increasing, I suppose, on Josh Allen, although I think he's immune to some of this. But everybody else on that roster, it's win or go home, and all the work that they're doing now, no matter how good it looks, the grades don't come in until they're on top of the AFC East, or they're on top of the first round bye in the playoffs, and they're getting themselves in position for that Super Bowl.
Schedule, difficult, new faces, young coaches, a first-time NFL play caller on the defensive side of the ball, a first-time head coach in Joe Brady. They're certainly, Mike, I mean, they at least Brandon Bean has shown, like, okay, this isn't good enough. We're going to kind of flip it on its head here. What was your ultimate, like, what did you sort of think of the move to fire Sean McDermott, I thought it was time. I made a joke earlier. We were talking just about like kind of all of the factors of them losing last year when you don't have a Patrick Mahomes and you don't have a Joe Burrow or a Lamar Jackson. And it kind of sort of felt like that was their biggest blown opportunity and maybe the biggest reason why McDermott's gone. But your thoughts of the move to finally make the move on McDermott and what sort of your thoughts are on the new head coach, Joe Brady?
Did anyone say Brandon Bean isn't good enough? Let's turn you on your head.
Lots of us.
One or two of us.
That was my question. Is like who's watching the Watchmen here? Where you know Sean McDermott and only Sean McDermott wasn't good enough, but Bean and Brady they can be promoted. That's what you know gets the antenna up when you're somebody who watches the whole league, where you look at the Bills. Relative failures. I'm going to say relative failures because of what you said. Obviously, this is a playoff team. They were not good enough last year. They were not. They let the Patriots catch up on them. They did not take the opportunity when they had when the Chiefs and the Ravens fell short. But I think that failure landed on the heads of McDermott and Bean and Brady and everyone. So the fact that it turned into more of a palace coup. That was kind of eye-opening, you know, and a lot of good things are being said about Jim Leonard. I'm you know, impressed generally from Jim Leonard, the work he did in the Broncos, et cetera. It was either time for continuity or time for change. I don't think they really did the continuity right or did the change right. I think this was an opportunity for some of the people in the front office there and in the coaching staff to kind of assess blame to somebody else and then feather their own nests.
And, Mike, I mean, I'm not going to speak for Terry Pegula and the Bills ownership team that ultimately made the decision, but I think if you want to look at this from a playing board, right, which is I think they wanted and felt they needed to make a shift defensively from the culture and the scheme that was, you know, largely like just the bend but don't break and that worked in the regular season but not in the postseason. What we heard a lot of in terms of why Brandon Bean was here, still here, and not Sean McDermott was that they had been sinking a lot of assets in the defense and that there was more, you know, of this, well, he doesn't think he has a good enough roster, but, you know, Terry Pegula and Brandon Bean, they think they do. We've been giving you lots. You're not, you know, we're giving you the brush, buddy. Make us art. And I'm wondering.
Please don't take me back to the news conference.
Sorry.
I tried to move on.
I digress. Can you get there? Like with all of that said, like, can you get to the place where, okay, all this makes sense and maybe this was the right move?
Yeah, we sunk a lot of assets into the defense, but, you know, Keon Coleman and Dalton Kincaid and the 10 different receivers we would bring in, you know, during the season to make these plays. That's a little bit of a self-serving agitprop on the people who survived. The people who lived the history wrote that history. I get the idea that McDermott's defense was getting stale. There was this issue where he was sort of defensive play caller and coordinator and a head coach and things like that. That probably wasn't the best move. So if you say, well, it's time to get rid of McDermott, that makes sense. Yeah, we all have questions about how that offense was run, too. We all have questions about Brady's system, the development of the players there. So why was only the McDermott problem addressed? And we can talk about how drafts have been handled, some of the decisions they made in terms of what they did at wide receiver, et cetera. Why was only one person held accountable? It's impossible to turn around from that and not look at it with a little bit of a side eye and suspicion based on who survived, who profited, and who was let go.
So how realistic is it to you that they can meet this pressure if they are indeed the team in the NFL with the most pressure on them and, I don't know, improve on winning 12 games a year, which is basically what, mostly what they've done, not every year, but, plenty of times. They have never had the one seed. That would be an improvement. Can they do all that in a season with all this change? Because some of the change we hope all of it's going to be positive, of course, Mike, but DJ Moore specifically is a piece they have not had on offense since they divested themselves of Stephon Diggs two off-seasons ago.
Right, and that's somebody that they've tried to replace from within through the draft. They haven't been able to do it. But, absolutely, they can meet this pressure. I'm looking at the FTN Almanac projections right now. They have the second highest projection in the AFC. I'll leave you guys to guess if you want to who's first in the AFC. But, they are substantially ahead in terms of projections of the Patriots, who are further down on that list. And, of course, the Dolphins and the Jets are kind of like a dispensary of victories for both of those teams, the way the projections work. So once you get there, then you're putting yourself in the group. So they're ahead of the Chiefs projection-wise. They're ahead of the Ravens projection-wise. Again, there's only one team ahead of them. Would you like to guess who's ahead of them in the projections?
I'm going to guess that it's Jacksonville.
Incorrect. You're close from the conference division standpoint.
Houston, then, it must be, right?
It is the Houston Texans, whose defense is considered to be so dominant, they get a little bounce back from their offense, and suddenly they're slaughtering everything in their wake, and their schedule is much easier than the Bills. So, yeah, this is another chance. Josh Allen gives them another chance. James Cook gives them another chance. Offensive line, the veterans on defense, et cetera. They're there. They can meet that pressure in 2026.
How much does the...
As the U.S. men's national team takes center stage at a home World Cup, make sure you're listening to Call It What You Want, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can join me, I'm Jimmy Conrad, alongside Charlie Davies, Tony Meola, Marcelo Balboa, and Benny Feilhaber throughout this tournament for previews, instant reactions, and analysis of every U.S. match. Then all summer, we're back every Tuesday and Thursday, covering all things U.S. men's national team. Download and follow Call It What You Want on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Uneven season DJ Moore had last year while the Bears were mostly breaking through, recognizing that Caleb Williams was far from a perfect player last year, but right. There's certainly big strides were made all around there with Ben Johnson, but DJ Moore was the guy that kind of fell through the cracks. Is that right? How alarming is that, and are you confident that he bounces back to what he had been prior to that in his career, which was a pretty regular 1,000-yard receiver?
Regular 1,000-yard receiver, we're on three successive years of his yardage totals dropping. Okay, and that's a little bit of a flag. Another thing, a little bit of a flag is his best seasons often lined up with sort of chaos on offense, whether it was the Panthers or with the Bears. We kind of got the impression where this was the guy who was the safety valve, the binky for your Justin Fields, for your guys like that. Now, he could be that for Josh Allen potentially, but I'm a worry there. And the other red flag is, yeah, the Bears seem to be ascending, and part of their ascendance was, we don't need DJ Moore anymore. Right. We got Luther Burden. We got these tight ends. We have Rome Odunze. This is a team that should be like, hey, we're all in. And instead, we're like, hey, we're going to make this guy available. I don't think he's the Stephon Diggs you're seeking. I think he's going to help, but this is going to be another year of Bills receiver by committee, and that's okay. But we keep seeing Bills receiver by committee with Joe Brady in charge of it. We keep seeing this, and we keep seeing it not being the thing that launches Josh Allen to the stratosphere, so to speak. So that's one more worry. I think he helps. I think he's a good addition. I think there needs to be more at wide receiver.
So, Mike, talking about a little bit of like the Joe Brady system, it's funny because Bulldog and I were sort of laughing about the fact that we haven't heard the term, everybody eats, which was like a fun, cute little thing in year one. And then last year it was like, it was like the stepbrother scene where like, now the suits sort of seem bleeped up, and now it's like, I think we'd all got sort of sick of the everybody eats thing. And I it's not lost on me that they still have, on their roster, the league's leading rusher last year, and they had some movement on the offensive line. But Aaron Kromer leaving, who was kind of the architect of that run game, I wonder kind of what your thoughts are about when you have the offensive coordinator, pass game coordinator calling plays, and then the other guy kind of architecting but calling the run plays. Mm-hmm. How much in your kind of experience, I mean, I know you've watched more football than I will have forgotten in my life, but like how much of that do you think changes? How different does their run game look without a guy that I think was so, integral to like what they were doing in their offensive, their running attack?
It can make a big difference. In a lot of teams, the offensive coordinator is pretty much de facto passing game coordinator. These guys make their money designing pass plays. And then if there's not a run game coordinator, the offensive line coach is often the person doing that. And sometimes that they do bring some secret sauce to that particular equation. I'm thinking of Jeff Southland here in Philly. He retired from the Eagles, and suddenly the running game was not the same. It's a matter of installation. It's a matter of sort of like the nuts and bolts of the design of things. I wouldn't put that up as a red flag, but you're kind of getting back to it with Brady. It's like, okay, well, what worked for the Bills last year? Well, the running game, because Cook and the offensive line were very good, and Allen contributes to the running game, and the backup running backs were good. Okay, well, who left? That's a running game coordinator. That's not ideal. They can promote from within. They can. I don't even know who their running game coordinator is right now, to be frank. But that isn't a sign that the Bills were optimizing things based on who was succeeding and who was failing. It's more of a, you know, who gets fed, so to speak, who gets promoted during the course of this little power struggle that happened in January.
You know, as Nate was asking the question that you just answered, I realize why I always think to look you up when Nate is in here filling in for Mike, because he speaks your language in a way that I just don't. Like, you guys, Mike Tenier, our guest here on the West Her Hotline. You can find his work at a Substack, Two Deep Zone, also a contributor to the FTN Football Almanac with our buddy Aaron Schatz. How about the run game as the focus for this team? Do you see, like, I've given the Bills credit, Mike, over the years here for sort of maybe being ahead of the wave, ahead of the curve on we're going to have to lean into the run game because defenses are just taking away the explosive passing game. And you know, the Bills, I think, capitalized on that and had, you know, a fantastic couple of seasons really running the ball. I wonder with the change, with no longer a defensive-minded head coach, and Brady's relationship with Allen and being the play caller and the head coach and not really having, you know, a head coach to answer to anymore, whether or not they – and this point that Nate makes about Cromer leaving and that you, you know, substantiate. Yeah. Do they lean more into a passing game piloted by Josh Allen, and is that a good idea?
Well, again, if you're facing the Jets or Dolphins – or some of the weaker opponents, you should just jam the ball down their throats. I know there were a couple of times last year, I don't remember the specific games, I'm watching Bills games, and I'm like, will you please stop toying with your food in the first quarter and the second quarter? Get two tight ends and just run the ball against this team, and then when they come up, let Josh and Allen make a play, get the 14-0, and just end this game quickly. And there was sort of this weird need to get everybody involved early in the game, and next thing you know, it's close against, I think the Buccaneers was one of them.
Yep.
It might have been the Saints was one of them, was early, if I remember. So you want your running game to be there when you are the superior team, which is going to happen a couple of times for the Bills, and you want it there to clean up your victories. After that, you want balance. So is Brady going to embrace that now that he doesn't have McDermott over his shoulder saying, I'm a defense coach, do it this way? I don't know. You got Josh Allen. It's not you can air it out and it should be okay. It just was frustrating at times, and not as a Bills fan, just as a viewer, saying this should not be close right now because you should do what the Rams do, which is go heavy and just be like, we can dominate you. We can win this game at any time. Take the lead and go. So let's see if they do that this year.
Let me put a bow on the Joe Brady conversation with this sort of question to you. Pete Carmichael ends up coming over as the team offensive coordinator. He's not going to call plays, but I'm starting to lean into the idea, Mike, that, like, you know, Brady has some experience in the Sean Payton system, and now Pete Carmichael's here, and maybe that's just to shadow everything that you want a veteran guy when you're a first-time head coach, and especially somebody you trust. If I were to tell you right now today that the Bills would look more to the Sean Payton principles of offense, that both in the running game, using the running backs more in the pass game, and a lot of the, you know, like what we know from Drew Brees to be, right? And those Marquise Colston and the big years that those offenses had. If I were to tell you today that that is who Joe Brady pictured this offense leaning into, would you say that that is the right move for the personnel, or are you kind of thinking that, like, that's maybe a little too nostalgic and isn't something that you think would work properly or work well in this with this group of players?
You know, it's a little bit of both, because Carmichael was there. He was Peyton's right-hand man forever. I think it was, 2 years ago, he was still Peyton's right-hand man. And with this personnel, those old Saints teams were kind of like, we don't really have a wide receiver one. We have a couple of possession guys, a couple of vertical guys. We rotate our receivers. They can see the logic behind that. Allen isn't Breeze, but he's bigger and stronger and can run, and Breeze can do those things, so he can do a lot of the same things. That's part of it. I guess my question is, well, where has that been for the rest of Brady's NFL career as coordinator? And now he's a Sean Payton guy. It's like, wait, I thought he was, you know, a Panthers guy. I thought he was an LSU guy. So it's a little chameleon. Like, yeah, Carmichael brings that in. But maybe it's not so much nostalgic as we're connecting the dots now. And we're going back to, hey, these guys were doing this like 8 years ago. Maybe that's it. I need to see it on the field to believe it.
You mentioned in passing, looking at the FTN chapter, the Almanac chapter on the Bills and projections. Where are you at on Dalton Kincaid? Because this is a somewhat confounding player. He seems extremely productive when used, but his usage doesn't really line up with what his product, you know, with the quality that he is. Maybe that's a pitch count health wise. I sense that it has been the last couple of years. So tough one to handicap because you don't know what the condition of his knees are going to be, I guess. But where are you at on Kincaid?
Well, he was really good in the playoffs. When we last saw him, I know he was playing very well there. And yeah, I'm actually looking up his game logs. Like, wow, boom or bust. I know injuries were part of it, and I know he blew up in a couple of games, and then he just disappeared. And I can't imagine the injuries have all to do with that. And I know Knox was involved. You have Jackson Howes. This is a team that wants to go two wide receivers, wants to go two tight ends, get all of these guys involved. So, I mean, I don't know. I haven't been following Kincaid's, like, health status recently. It's another one of those questions about the offense. I would say that's another one of these questions. You know, only one guy had more than 40 catches last year. Only, I think, Shakir had more than that. You say everybody's feeding. Not everybody's feeding. A lot of people are going hungry right now, and Cook is feeding, and I guess Shakir was feeding, and that was it, and that's another question that's got to be answered. Kincaid is supposed to be the de facto, like, possession guy in this offense. We haven't seen it in the last 2 years. I think we need to see it.
Something that has struck me over the last couple of days, and Nate and I have talked a little bit about this today already, Mike, is how much the landscape has shifted in the AFC. For years, we would talk at this time of the year with you, and it'd be the Bills, the Ravens, and the Chiefs, and like the Bengals might take a turn. Miami had a hot minute when they scored 70 on Denver, and they were ahead of the Bills for most of that one season, but the Bills nipped them at the wire, whatever. But it feels like the hierarchy, it's not so much that the Bills, Ravens, and Chiefs have been toppled, but I feel like maybe they've come back a little bit and the rest of the pack has risen up.
That's kind of it. The analogy I use is everybody went into pit row last year. You know, the Chiefs had to go into pit row because they had a flat tire, and the Ravens had to go into pit row, and the Bills kind of went into pit row a little bit because they have the coaching change. And now they're coming out, and as they're coming out, it's like, oh, it appears that the Texans and the Patriots and the Broncos are now ahead of us. And the question becomes, well, is that just temporary? Are we about to slip past them, or are they going to have to enter pit row, or how's that going to go? So, yeah, it's a much harder conference to prognosticate. I look at this big Texans number here for a projection, and I say, I know their defense is good, but do I really see, you know, 12 wins, 13 wins, first round bye? I don't see it. You start looking at teams like the Steelers, you're like, are they good? Or the Jaguars, what are they right now? The Broncos, we don't know if Bo Nix is healthy. Okay, we don't know if Bo Nix is that good.
Right, there's that too, yeah.
Right, well, there's that, but like if he comes back and it's like, well, he's doing the defense and Peyton's running the show and making him look better, we don't know if he's even going to be able to be capable of that. So it's very tricky, and I guess in those circumstances, it's very comforting to have Josh Allen. Because you know Josh Allen is Josh Allen. Even Lamar Jackson, he's always hurt. You know, Mahomes is coming back from injury. You have a big, healthy, in his prime Josh Allen, and that is going to cover up for a lot of potential ills.
So you mentioned the Texans as kind of the leader in the clubhouse right now in terms of, you know, preseason rankings. We were discussing whether the Ravens should also be considered and lumped into this conversation of teams with the most pressure because I mean, they've kind of been in the same conversation the Bills do in the regular season, can't get it done in the playoffs. I was of the mind that I don't really lump them in, and it's largely because of how people view Lamar Jackson versus Josh Allen, right, wrong, indifferent, and for whatever people's motivations are, whatever. Where do you stand on this Ravens team as they head into, I think, a really important season for them with a new head coach? And by the way, some drama this offseason with the whole Max Crosby thing and how teams are viewing their front office, so on and so forth. But yeah, Ravens, talk to me.
I think the overall pressure is high. Now, of course, they change coaches too, and Jesse Minter is not going to be held that accountable in year one for these things. Eric DaCosta might, because of the Max Crosby trade and things like that. So the general manager might be under pressure. Lamar Jackson is always in this weird nether region where, you know, he has to get his contract renegotiated, and the Ravens seem to be trying to do it, and he doesn't seem to care one way or the other. So there's a weird element to that. So I would say the pressure between those two teams is pretty similar right now, but it's hard to say who individually is under pressure. Okay, the head coaches are safe. The quarterbacks are going to make money no matter what. It becomes more of a matter of you know, rank and file guys on the team. Will the team get blown up? One thing about the Ravens is I think their roster got a little more blown up than the Bills roster did this year. Yeah. And I don't know how that equates to pressure. On the one hand, the new guys might have a chance to be like, well, you guys are new. If you're Derrick Henry or somebody like that, you might be looking at saying this is your last year. It's the end of the line if you can't get it done in 2026.
Where are we finding all your best stuff? I know you're over on the Blue Sky. Good for you for taking the plunge. I admire you. I can't seem to quit the habit, so I'm still stuck in the mud. Is that where we got to look you up here, Two Deep Zone? How do we find you?
Yeah, you can find me on Blue Sky at Mike Tenier. And then the Two Deep Zone is now on Ghost. I'm not going to give you the URL because it's long and strange. Look up Two Deep Zone, T-O-O, Deep Zone, like a Cure album, not like the defense. It's too deep. And then look up Ghost, because that's where you'll find it. Had to move from Substack for similar reasons. That's why I moved from X to Blue Sky. But it's the Two Deep Zone Ghost newsletter. Check it out. I'll be really revving into high gear in a week or two with training camp previews by the middle of July.
Thanks a lot for the time, Mike. We always enjoy it. Good luck with all that, and we'll hope to reconnect real soon.
Absolutely. Take care and enjoy what's left of your summer.
We will. Come on, it just started.
I know. We can talk.
Summer.
Yeah,
get him back. Yeah. What? Left of my summer. We live in Buffalo, dude. It was like snowing in May. I mean, what are you, the rest of our summer?
I know. It's weird to say, but he's not rough.
Mike Tenier. All right, there you go. Love the visit. Drops a Cure reference.
I was going to say, man, that guy knows his audience.
It's all good. Yeah. All right, we'll hit up a timeout and, you know, sink our teeth further into the Bills conversation we've been having most of the day so far. And Houston, I want to talk about that. We've talked to Aaron Schatz about it. We just talked to Mike Tenier about it. Let's talk to Nate Geary about it. He's in for Mike. I'm the Bulldog, and this is WGR.
Have you ever felt like you were living just a B or B plus life? It's so dangerous to live that, more dangerous than a B minus or a C plus life, because when you're living a B or B plus life, you don't change it. You think it's good enough. Is it? I'm Susie Welch. I host a podcast called Becoming You. People think, okay, an A-plus life is not available to me, but there is a way. We are all in the process of becoming ourselves. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.